Hello and welcome to episode 96 of Feckin' Metal. I'm your host, Fergal Trainer. I've been gone for a minute, as my co-host on this episode, Melissa, might say. I haven't released an episode of Feckin' Metal in over a month. In fact, the last ones I released were back all the way in February and were the three parts of the DJ Neil Kay interview that I conducted back a few months ago. They were kind of quite meaty. So I hope you had time to digest those and you enjoyed them. I got some nice feedback about those. So if you're in contact, thank you very much. I appreciate it as always. But during that time, on my month off from this podcast, I haven't just been sitting around picking my hole. I have appeared on a number of other podcasts. I have a new podcast myself. So if you happen to miss any of those, here's a heads up. So I appeared on my friend Emmett's podcast, From the Depths. That's the way the TH goes. My old speech and drama teacher used to say back in 1992 or thereabouts. Mrs. McHugh, if you're listening, I'd just like to let you know I really enjoyed those classes and I wish I kept up that later in life. Drama, at least. But I didn't. Anyway, yes, sorry, I appeared on an episode of From the Depths with my friend Emmett, who's the host, and Matty, who's our mutual friend, who was also on the episode, and we did a Judas Priest album ranking. So those of you who know me well know that it's not a particular thing that I do too often, ranking albums, ranking discographies of bands, but on a rare occasion, I will do it, and this was one of those rare occasions. So we went through the entire discography of Judas Priest and ranked the albums from least best to best, as Uncle Steve might say. And actually quite enjoyed it when I got into it. It was very difficult, obviously, to pick the top 10 and the top 5 and all that malarkey, but it was a good chat, and go and have a look for that, From the Depths. You'll find it anywhere podcasts are found. I also appeared on Feckin' Biscuit. What's that? It's a Limp Bizkit podcast. What the hell are you talking about, I hear you say. Well, go over to the Maiden A to Z feed, that's the Iron Maiden podcast, and have a look at their recent episodes, and you'll find it there. And we talk about, on that episode, we talk about the timeless classic song Nookie. What's all this about, you're wondering? Well, if you have no idea, just go over and have a look, and you'll see, and it'll become quite obvious pretty soon what it's all about. But that was one of my favourite things I've ever done in podcasting, doing that episode with Eric, where we covered the Limp Bizkit song Nookie, and you'd really have to listen to find out to understand what I'm talking about, but I highly recommend that you do. I think it kind of slipped through the cracks a bit, and people didn't realise what was going on, but go over and have a listen there to that episode of Feckin' Bizkit. I say it's one of my favourite things I've ever done in podcasting. I'd say I'd rank it alongside Taylor Made, which was, of course, the offshoot of Wayne's Iron Maiden podcast, where me and Trevor co-hosted a podcast that was comparing the songs of Taylor Swift to the songs of Iron Maiden, and it was an aspect of the storyline of Wayne's Iron Maiden podcast for a period of a few weeks there, back a year ago, would you believe? It's actually a year, Paul has informed me, since those episodes were released. But that leads me into my next topic, which is to mention that Wayne's Iron Maiden podcast has finished this week, and Paul, released his last episode there, which was an episode about the Iron Maiden song Burning Ambition, which he had never got to in the original chronology of the podcast. As always, it was brilliant, it was really enjoyable, as was the penultimate episode, the Brave New World album review special. And I was actually quite sad that it's finished, and I know a lot of other people were as well. Wayne or Paul had the unusual combination, not too frequently found, where he treats the subject matter seriously, but it's also a humorous podcast, and that's an understatement saying it was humorous. It was hilarious at many points, laugh out loud funny. The number of characters involved is astounding. Alan Bell wrote on either Facebook or Twitter, I can't remember, that it was like the podcast equivalent of this, The Fast Show. If you haven't heard of The Fast Show, it was a popular comedy sketch show from the UK in the 1990s. And I couldn't agree more. It was a brilliant analogy. There were so many different people involved, so many moving parts to it. And I have to say it was an honour for me to be involved, even in a small way, appearing on the 100th episode special a while back, and also the Taylor Madoff shoot as well. And an honour to be mentioned in the last ever episode of Wayne's Iron Maiden podcast too. So wishing Paul all the best in any future creative endeavours. And I'm sure he'll do something, as we know, not just being a podcaster, he's a talented musician. There was many specially composed tracks, which were only a really small part of some episodes, but clearly so much work went into those. Throughout the podcast, he did musical tracks, even the you know, Stratosphere song and the Steve Harris's Diary intro music and everything like that, and you know, the other full kind of songs he did as well. But yeah, it was just such an entertaining podcast, and it's sad to see it go, but I think it's probably good to go out when you're on top as well, you know. Leave the people wanting more, isn't that what they say? So let's move on again. Yes, so I also have my own new podcast called Feckology. It's unrelated to heavy metal, but for anybody who may have listened to any previous podcasts I did with my friend Toomey in the past, and that includes Two-Faced Fake Snakes, Open Us, and the Feckin' Check-In, it's kind of a continuation of the Feckin' Check-In. If you never listened to that, what that was, we used the word feck as an acronym, F-E-C-K, and that stood for Funny Observations, Entertainment, Culture, and Kernels of Truth. And we each picked a topic to go coincide with those categories in the episode, and we talked about them. But this is kind of a slimmed down version of that. We pick one topic, something that's happened in our lives, an observation of some sort, and we discuss it, and it's just in a short 20 minute burst. So if you have any interest whatsoever in hearing me talk about things that are unrelated to heavy metal with a kind of a humorous slant, then go and check out Feckology. There is a new Twitter account set up, at Feckology. Luckily, that wasn't taken, surprisingly. No, not really. And yeah, we're releasing an episode every week as it stands. But in the theme music, you will notice that we talk about broken promises. So you can probably expect some of those too. Three episodes out now. Have a listen to that if you want. You know, up to you, whatever you're into, whatever you're having yourself. So anyway, moving on to the actual topic of what this episode is about. This is run through of the early discography of the band Sortilege, the original incarnation of the French heavy metal band Sortilege. And this is a co-production with my friend Melissa from Metal Chat with Melissa. This is going to be released simultaneously on both of our feeds. So if you're listening to this, you've obviously chosen to listen here. Maybe go and listen to it on her end as well. She might have some interesting things to say in her intro as well, an outro. Who knows? But anyway, yeah, so we went through the discography of the early incarnation of Sortilege. Obviously, they broke up, got back together, broke up again, got back together again. And now there's actually two current versions of the band out at the moment. So we just cover the EP released in 1983 and the two albums that followed then, Metamorphose and L'Armée de Hero. And it's really only the French ones we cover, not the English ones. But this, I won't say it's a deep dive, but maybe it's a, you know, it's a toe in the water into the discography. So ideal for those, ideal for the uninitiated, let's say, people who aren't familiar with their music. And as I mentioned in this episode, I became familiar with the music of Sortilege from listening to an episode of Melissa's podcast several years ago. So I had never heard of them before. And if you like the kind of music I like generally, then I'd say you're going to like them. So we feature plenty of clips, talk about the albums, talk about the history. Melissa has her own personal history with the band from, you know, when they were contemporary. I obviously only discovered them a few years ago, so it was a really enjoyable chat that we had. And I won't hold you any longer, so I hope you enjoyed this dip or extended paddle into the early discography of Sortilege. Sorry, I'm just going to record the whole thing here because I feel like we might say interesting things that might be of value to the podcast, and we might lose them if we just chit-chat for like half an hour.
Yeah, that's easier. That's what I do.
Hello, Melissa. Yes, hello. I'm very well. You're going to pour a Guinness here.
I'm going to pour a Devil's Purse Porter.
Excellent. That sounds like a fancier beer than I'm having anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, I did get an AC/DC ticket, but I got into a sneaky pre-sale that wasn't really properly open to the public that a friend of mine shared with me. So, yeah, I got in there kind of underhandedly, I'd say, but I got a ticket.
Are you in a good spot, or did you have to?
I just got general standing, but yeah. What they implemented the dynamic pricing model, which I've never seen before in my life in Ireland. I'm aware that it happens in the US and all that, but yeah, they implemented the dynamic pricing, so I got in there before that was an issue. So yeah, I got a regular price ticket, which is still ridiculously expensive. It was €155 when you include the fees. But yeah, look, it's fucking AC/DC. I make an exception for AC/DC.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't make an exception for too many other bands, really, to be honest. But they're on the way out, I reckon. So why not see them?
Exactly. You have to go this time. You have to go.
I absolutely have to go.
But it sucks. And it sucks. And it sucks because they know you have to go.
That's it. And that's why they brought in this pricing model. I'm confident it's like because they know that everyone is like, oh, AC/DC, they're not going to play ever again. Blah, blah, blah. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. I know. They do it here all the time.
Yeah.
It sucks. It's totally ridiculous. I mean, they do it. They try to do it even with Maiden, you know, in Canada.
Right.
It's awful. Anyway, where's Elaine?
She's downstairs.
Tell her I said hello.
I will. I will. I'm up in my lair.
Oh, that's right. You have a man cave now.
Yeah. I do things like this. She lets me do my thing.
Of course she does. Why wouldn't she? So you had a good time with the guys from Liverpool?
Oh, yeah. We had a great time. Yeah. So Don and Paul came over. Unfortunately, Steph couldn't make it, but, you know, them's the breaks. But yeah, we did. We went to Blaze Bailey, which was fantastic in Whelan's. And it was so loud, actually, which was a fantastic result for Blaze because I have watched Blaze Bailey in Dublin back in 2012 play to a very, very small room of people, you know, which wasn't so loud. And in the 12 years since then, he's done a fantastic job of, one, I'd say, releasing brilliant music, and two, I would say, building his fan base. Back in 2012, that Blaze released that album, The King of Metal, which wasn't particularly good, I will say. It was a step down from The Man Who Would Not Die and whatever the one after that was. And I felt like he was kind of on the downturn back then. But then he released the trilogy of the, you know, the fuck was that called? The Redemption of William Black.
Yeah, and The Redemption of William Black and, oh my God.
I can't remember the fucking name of it.
Two of Us, Jesus Christ.
I'm gonna look it up here, hold on.
Oh my God. Hold out.
Hold on a second. I'll look it up and I'll cut this bit out to make us look like we're really knowledgeable.
Because look like we're not idiots. I own them. I could probably go pull them out.
Yeah, I can see the fucking goddamn albums here, but
I know
they
I can too.
Endure and Survive.
Endure. I was trying to think of it. I knew it started with E.
Prayers of Light and then Redemption of William Black. What was the actual name of the fucking... The Infinite Entanglement series. So yeah, he released the Infinite Entanglement series, and I reckon that kind of got him back up on the upswing, and people's like ears were open, and people were paying more attention. And then when he released War Within Me, I think people really started paying attention to Blaze again. And he managed to sell out Whelan's in Dublin, which is huge. So 450 people sold out. He's actually
is that the place that we saw? I didn't mean to cut you off. Is that the place where we saw British Lion?
It's not the exact place where we saw them. Oh. So it's part of the same complex, though. So Whelan's is a pub which has many various different stages or venues within it. And beside Whelan's and owned by the same people, so essentially part of the same complex, is Opium, which is about a 700, 800 capacity venue. So, yeah, it's basically, it's the same building, more or less, or it's the same complex, but it's a separate venue. But yeah, Blaze has booked Opium for September, so let's see how that goes.
Because that's a step up, right? That's bigger. Opium is bigger than Whelan's.
Well, it's an enormous step up, yeah. So Whelan's fits 450 people.
Okay, yeah, and then...
And that was sold out.
Yeah.
But it only really sold out in the one or two days approaching the actual date of the gig, whereas Opium 700, 800, it'll be a more difficult task to sell it out. But I assume the promoters are confident enough to just go, right, well, fuck it, you sold out Whelan's, let's just see how you do. And like, that's the best way to approach it, I reckon. It's like, well, you sold out this venue, let's see how you do in a slightly larger venue. And that's pretty much band promotion 101.
I agree.
Well, you sold out a small venue, let's see how you do in a bigger venue.
Absolutely. You know, then you can, I don't know, we can put a curtain up if you need to or whatever. But yeah, I mean, Kiss has been doing it for years, right? Playing larger venues than they're supposed to.
Yeah. But like, I just wish Blaze all the best luck in the fucking world, like, because he was so good. And the feedback that he got from pretty much anyone who I knew who was at that gig. And like, I had many friends at the gig. I didn't meet all of them, but afterwards I spoke to all of them, and you know, at various points. And I had friends who were at the Limerick gig and stuff. And the feedback was across the board. It was excellent. It was like, Blaise is fantastic. He sang really well. He sang the Iron Maiden songs exceptionally well. He sang Como Estás Amigos unbelievably well. So like, the feedback across the board was brilliant. And I feel like, you know, his time has come finally. You know, it's 2024, but I feel like eventually, or like finally, people have started to actually listen or pay attention to what he's doing. And it took a long fucking time, but I feel like they finally started to pay attention.
Yeah, I had friends that went to the Limerick show too, and they loved it. They came from Glasgow, and they thought it was just outstanding. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's a slippery slope, because on the one hand, his association with Iron Maiden attracts people, and on the other hand, it detracts people, because a lot of people didn't like those albums that he was on. Yeah. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, I 100% agree. But I think what's happened in recent years is that people have gone back and listened to those albums. And, you know, Blaise says this in interviews and stuff, but like, all singers or all artists would probably say this in interviews, like, oh, people have gone back and they've really enjoyed those albums. But I think that's actually started to happen, because there were so many people there at the gig who knew the words to all of those songs and who were clearly there for those songs. And I have a friend, Martin, who was at the Iron Maiden gig like in Dublin in 1996 when they did the X Factor, and he said he felt there were probably more people at this Blaise gig in Whelan's than there were at the gig for the X Factor in 1996, and that was in a venue that would have fit 1,500 people, and he said he thought there were fewer people at that than there were at Whelan's. Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, yeah, well, there you go.
But we're not here to talk about Blaise Bayley.
No.
We are here to talk about Sortilège, who are a French heavy metal band who have been around since basically 1981 or so. And they currently have a couple of different versions of their band out, like a lot of bands do, like Tank, or like a lot of those.
Rat.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. But back in the 80s, Sortilège were an underground French heavy metal band that I'd never heard of at all, actually, until I heard you play the song, I think it was Amazon, on your podcast probably about 3 years ago now. And you were interviewing somebody who had a YouTube show. I can't remember the person's name, but you were interviewing somebody who did a YouTube show who was a fan of Sortilège, and you played clip of, I think, Amazon in the opening of your episode. But I discovered them through you, so maybe it would be best if you explained your history with Sortilège.
So I didn't know who they were either, and there was probably an article or so, but I don't quite remember it, to be honest. You know, we would get, a lot of times we would get the magazines from overseas, but you would get them, they were always late, or they were expensive, so you didn't get like every single month. You didn't necessarily have a subscription. But I was over at the import bin, as I liked to be.
Mm.
And I can't remember exactly. I think it was the end of 85, beginning of 86. I was trying to remember. And it was over there. And the first thing that I got from them was that was actually their second album.
Okay.
I saw the cover. I thought the cover was cool and kind of interesting. And I asked around, because a lot of times the staff knew more about bands that were in the import bin than the rest of us did. Nobody really knew anything about them.
Mm.
So I remember it was like $7.99 import, which is kind of kind of expensive back then.
Yeah. Which sounds like nothing right now, but yeah.
Sounds like nothing now. You've got about 25 of them now, right?
Sorry to interrupt there. When you say their second album, so are you talking about L'Armée des Héros?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. So I didn't know that was their second album. I mean, like I said, I didn't really know anything about them. So the album came out, funny enough, both of their albums in the 80s came out on February 3rd, a year apart, which is kind of an interesting thing. But this would be probably around October, November of 85, or even maybe into maybe 86. So it had been out for a minute overseas. I don't really know about here in the US.
Mm.
They never got any airplay in the US. I really liked them. And funny enough, I actually turned them on to somebody who worked there, who we were, when I was buying it, we were talking about it, and they were like, let me know what you think, and you know, so on and so forth.
Mm.
So they came across Metamorphosos. My French isn't that good. Anyway, he came across that album and said to me, hey, I found this. And so I got that as well.
Mm.
And then, and I loved them, and nobody knew who they were. And like I said, they never got any airplay. I never saw any articles about them in US magazines. They never came to play here, as far as I know. If they did, they didn't come by me. And that was just kind of it. And it was just like something that I had in my collection, and you just have it. And you know, like a lot of bands, you know, you don't really know whatever happened to them. Little did I know that they broke up in 86, you know? And then over the years, I don't even know what happened to those albums. I think they were part of that stuff. My mother sold a bunch of my t-shirts and a bunch of my stuff back in 1990.
And sorry, what was it at the time that made you actually physically pick up the album?
It was I liked the album cover. I thought the album cover was kind of neat.
Yeah, so the album cover, it looks like a kind of a Greek statue. It's a grey statue with red eyes. This is Larmé de Hero, which came out in 1985. And it has a kind of a tear of blood coming out of the left eye. Or sorry, as you look at it, the left eye, but the right eye.
Yeah, I mean, it looked interesting. It looked sort of avant-garde. And the other thing was, you know, we're looking at it and we're looking at the titles and I'm going, okay, so this is because, I mean, you got imports from other countries and they were usually speaking in English.
Yeah.
They were usually singing in English. Mm-hmm. So the idea that this was going to be a French language album appealed to me. Just the whole thing. It just, I think it translated to Tears of the Hero, right?
Heroes, yeah. English.
Heroes, Tears of the Hero.
Yep.
And so I just thought it seemed like the song title sounded interesting. I don't know, it was something about it. I used to take a lot of chances on getting stuff. You know, you'd go to the bin and you'd just sort of see what was there and you just, you know.
So yeah, I can understand why the artwork was what appealed to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. Kind of caught my attention. You know, a lot of the stuff is like darker hues. And I mean, this wasn't like, it wasn't like an Iron Maiden album, right? Where you see like a scary cover or whatever like that. I mean, I didn't even know it was going to be a metal album, to be honest with you. I mean, I was told, he's like, it's the hard rock metal section.
Mm. Sorry to interrupt. Sorry. So you took a punt really without knowing what the music sounded like, but you saw it, that it was in a metal section.
Yes. Yeah. So I said, all right, well, let's just see, you know, and then I really liked it. And there was a club next door. The place where I got it is a place called Peaches. No, it doesn't exist anymore. In Florida. And there's a club next door called Club 19 where all the metal bands used to play. And so we used to see all of the guys from all the people that worked at Peaches were always at the club. Plus I was always at Peaches. So I would talk to these guys and I knew these guys and I'd drink beer with these guys and whatnot. So we would have conversations about the different music and they would recommend stuff and vice versa. And so we talked about this album and I, you know, I was telling them how I thought it was really good. How I saw elements of Scorpions, Iron Maiden, Deep Purple, even maybe a little Sabbath. You know, so he was also interested in it. And then when this other album, which was the first album, came into the store, I was alerted and I got it. And I kind of like this one better in the sense that I think it's heavier, but they both have really great stuff on them.
Very good. All right. So let's go back kind of to the start. So Sortilège was a band that was formed in, 1981, but they were active between 1980 and 1981 as Bloodwave, then from 1981 onwards as Sortilège. But they didn't really release anything until their initial demo in 1982. That was released at the time independently on cassette. It was just called Sortilege or Demo, I think. And then their first proper release was the EP in 1983, the self-titled EP, Sortilege. But they had two albums, obviously, that followed. And you're coming from the perspective of having heard their second album, their second full album, first.
Their second album, and then their first album, and then the EP. I went like on a backwards.
So for the benefit of people like me who weren't around back then listening to heavy metal, how did you think Sortilege compared musically to their contemporaries at the time?
I thought that they were compatible to what I was listening to. I thought they were really, really good. And I thought they should have been bigger. I mean, I was requesting them. Like, I called radio stations and they had no idea. They didn't. Oh, I don't have that stuff. And it wasn't like they could download it like today or whatever. You know, it's like they didn't have the album in their file. It was kind of sort of it, you know. I made tapes for people and gave it to them and was like, you got to check this out. If you like Scorpions, if you like Maiden, if you like, you know, the stuff that's on the radio now, the rock and metal now, you're really going to like this. It's really, really good. Some people were put off by the fact that there was, you know, French lyrics. Mm. I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, my French isn't that great, but I think English speaking people, and maybe just an American point of view, I think Americans tend to be more snobby about bands that sing in their native language. And maybe it's because Europe is surrounded by countries that speak different languages that people are more open to that.
Mm.
But in America, they tend to be very kind of snobby about it. And back then, there really wasn't like extreme vocals, right? So now you're kind of like, I don't understand a word this guy's saying, but it doesn't matter. I really like the song. But back then, it was a different story.
Yeah.
So people were like, well, they're not speaking in English. I don't even know what they're singing about.
Mm.
It's like, but the music is really good. Like, the guitar solo is really good. The vocals are really good. I mean, this guy's voice is just as good as your Rob Halford, your Dio, your Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah. And I tend to agree with you about that. So back then, and still to this day, Christian Zuhl or Zwei, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Zuhl perhaps, Augustine was the singer. And he has been the singer from 1981 to 1986, 1992, when they had a brief reunion, and from 2018 to 2020. And now he's also in one of the kind of modern disputed versions of Sortilege. But we'll get into that a bit later. But yeah, so Christian has always been the voice of Sortilege. He's on all of the commercially available Sortilege releases, whether it's the new modern version of the band or the old classic version of the band. But let's go back to the vocals and the French language for a second. So back then, it didn't bother you at all, you're saying, basically, that the vocals were in French?
No issue at all. Mm. It kind of made me want to like try to brush up on my French.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of bands will do that, right? I mean, they'll sing in English to try to get more commercial attention, which they eventually did try to do, and that didn't really work for them. And I have to tell you that when I listen to the English versions, I actually like the French versions better.
Oh, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. And I actually find it difficult to listen to the English versions of the songs. It's kind of like there was a bit of revisionist history or something going on there where they don't seem as authentic as the French ones. But even if you look at some of the song titles and you go into Google Translate and translate them, they don't even directly translate into what the French version is, or, you know, they don't reverse translate into French.
Well, the other problem with that is if you are writing a song and you're writing words to a melody and then you translate it, the translation may not match that melody. So you have to kind of rework it or fit it in somehow. I saw on the their page that, and I forgot the gentleman's name, but he just recently passed away. And Christian had posted something about his friend passing away. And he had said that he was the guy that translated their lyrics into English.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it was definitely, you know, probably a record company thing where they said, you know, if you want to get some success,
yeah,
you know, in America or whatever, you're probably going to need to crack the market and do it in English with English songs.
All right. So Sortilege released their first actual commercially available release that wasn't a demo in 1983. It was the self-titled Sortilege EP, as I previously stated. And I know, as you said, it wasn't the first one that you purchased, but going back in time, or at some point, did you eventually pick up a physical copy of the Sortilege EP?
I do now, but I didn't have one at the time. I actually heard that at the record store, but I didn't get it. So I have it now, but I didn't have it then.
And is that an original release you have or a reissue?
No, it's not. It's a reissue.
All right. I myself picked up a reissue of Sortilege from High Roller Records recently, and I have to say it's a fantastic release. They really do a great job with their reissues. They put a lot of effort into them. There's a lot of detail. There's
Yeah, and I have that. I have that as well. That's the one I have.
Unbelievable. They do it so well. Every aspect of the reissue, the liner notes, the lyrics, the inserts, the whole presentation is top-notch. I've never seen any better reissues. It's not some kind of generic album reissue, something like Back on Black, which, you know, you get. Other bands kind of reissue some stuff, and there's not very much included in it, but the High Roller Records ones are fantastic.
No, High Roller does a really good job. Cherry Red does a really good job. There's some companies out there that do a really good job of doing reissues.
Okay, so let's dive into this release. So looking at the musical landscape at the time, you have Iron Maiden, Peace of Mind being released. You have Metallica, Kill 'Em All being released.
Got Def Leppard, Pyromania.
There you go.
It's 83. Europe's first album came out in 83. Yeah, I mean, 83 was a good year.
Yeah, but you also have this song, Amazon, which is on the Sortilege EP. And as I said, the first time I ever heard this was on your podcast. So let's have a listen to that. Right, let's not get too carried away there. But yes, that was the first Sortilege I ever heard, and it was on your podcast. It's what made me a fan of the band. Never heard of them before, and my God, what an introduction.
Fantastic. And I think it fits right into 1983. I think that song, I mean, you can pair that up with anything, with the whatever, the Def Leppard, the Europe, the Maiden, anything that's coming out in 83.
Mm. Absolutely.
I mean, it's not thrash. You wouldn't, you know, pair it with Metallica, but all the other stuff, like, absolutely.
And then all of a sudden, you hear the French singing for the first time, which takes you by surprise. Here you go. So there we go. A fantastic riff, and it fits precisely in with the heavy metal that was coming out in 1983. But what sets it aside is, of course, the French singing.
The singing is so good. The singing is so good, though. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's French singing, but I mean, the guy's got a great voice.
I agree with you. The singing is excellent. So even if you're not a fluent French speaker, or maybe you learned French in school and you can't really recall a lot of it now, it doesn't matter if you don't really understand the vocals, because they're so well delivered. It makes it irrelevant what the actual singer is talking about.
You know, people talk all the time about how they learned English through, like, music, right? That's how people who don't speak English as a first language have learned English through listening to Iron Maiden, or listening to whatever, listening to bands. And that's how they learn English, or, you know, watching videos on MTV. So, yeah. I mean, maybe we're going to learn our French. We'll learn some French from them, you know? I mean, but that's what I'm saying, is that I think that non-English speakers are more open to that sort of thing. They're huge in Germany. They did really, really well in Germany in the 80s. And, you know, obviously they don't speak French in Germany. They speak German, but they didn't seem to have a problem with that.
Mm.
And I think that a lot of it just has to do with the fact that if you're on a continent where, you know, the next country speaks a different language and the next country speaks a different language, like, that's not how it is in the U.S. It's, you know, state to state to state. And I think that is what kind of hurt them.
Yeah. But do you think that if they had have sung in English from the get-go, that they might have been more successful?
I think I mean, they would have had a written, they would have had to write a song in English. You know, the Scorpions write their songs in English.
Yeah.
They don't write them in German and then translate them. And I think that that's where you get the sort of disconnect, you know, and probably they couldn't, you know, it's very likely, like when I had, when I had Adriana from Geisha on my show, you know, she was from Venezuela. And I asked her, I said, how come you sang in Spanish? Did you not think about speaking in English? And she said, I didn't speak English. I couldn't write a song in English. I didn't speak English. And so maybe they just couldn't speak English. I mean, the way that Christian made it sound with this, with this, this gentleman that passed away was that he translated things because nobody else could.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, they needed somebody to do it at the time when they made the decision to do it. And I suppose whatever resources they had available, they utilized. So, yeah. Anyway, let's move on with this song. So I'm going to play the guitar solo from it because I think it's a fantastic early example of the excellent guitar playing that can be found throughout the Sortilège catalogue. So there you go. Yeah, just brilliant stuff straight out of the gate with Sortilège. I mean, I don't want to keep harping on about this, but like the French doesn't really affect the listening experience if you don't understand it. Just from the get-go, they know what they're doing and they've got it down.
They do. They do. And they seem to be, from what I can tell, singing about interesting subjects, right? Singing about historical things and, right, they have a song about Attila the Hun and they have a song about Valkyrie and they, you know what I mean? So it seems like, from what I can tell, they're not meatheads.
I don't think they're meatheads at all, yeah.
They're not Motley Crue.
All right, so the next song I wanted to highlight is the song Gladiateur, which is obviously Gladiator in English. Yeah. And if we go to about 30 seconds into the song, this is a great example of why French is such a brilliant language, sounding, a brilliant sounding language for heavy metal, whether it's, you know, here on this example or other French heavy metal bands from the time. Band H-Bomb, you sent me a CD of them.
Yep.
There's another band called Blaspheme who were around at the same time, or even modern day Temptation. I think the language suits heavy metal and I can't really explain why, but all I can recommend is that people listen to this next clip and see if you agree.
Hit that note, that unbelievable.
Yeah,
no, I agree. I think it's a beautiful language and I think it just sounds excellent.
Yeah, but then moving away from the vocals and the singing for a moment, from a band perspective, from a musicianship perspective, let's have a listen to this solo coming up here. So what a debut release from Sortilège so far, and we've only listened to a couple of clips of a couple of songs, but are there any other songs on this debut that stand out to you, Melissa?
They do a song called Sortilège.
Yes.
Right? They do a, they have their Iron Maiden or their Black Sabbath or whatever.
It's their Iron Maiden, really, yeah, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Self-titled track from self-titled album from the band called Sortilège.
Same with the band, yeah.
I was only listening to this earlier on myself and I noted down that we should play a clip of this. So yeah, let's have a listen to this.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. But yeah, this is another fucking banger on this EP. It's just full of them. There's no filler on this.
Yeah, but that voice, I mean, he could do Iron Maiden songs. He could do Judas Priest songs. He could, you know. And Stefan, is it Dumont? I think it's Stefan Dumont. He's the guitar player on the first iteration of the band. And he's so good. He's so good. And you can hear some Van Halen in there. And you can hear, you know, he's definitely... he was definitely listening to the contemporaries, and he was also definitely seems like a guy that liked Richie Blackmore, you know, and stuff like that. And you could hear that in their early stuff as well.
Well, let's have a listen here. So here's this blistering guitar solo.
I mean, he's as good as Adrian. He's as good as John Norum. He's as good as anybody out there.
You're damn right. He is. And unfortunately, at the time, they didn't get as much of a spotlight shined upon them as those bands you mentioned did. But in 2024/2023, it feels like they're finally getting their moment in a way, because when I'm at a festival, I see so many Sortilege patches, I see t-shirts, I see and meet, you know, Sortilege fans and talk to them about the band based on the fact that they're wearing a patch. And it seems like maybe their time has come, but possibly 3 decades too late.
It's sad because everybody in that band is in their mid 60s now. I mean,
yeah,
Christian is 66. I mean, they're older now, you know, and it's unfortunate that all that time, this time has gone by when they could have hung on and done really, really well.
Well, they could have capitalized on that, but unfortunately now, yeah, it's too late. So after the debut EP in 1983, they released their debut first full-length album, if you want, in 1984, Metamorphose. Now, you obviously mentioned already that you listened to L'Arme the Hero, the album after this first, so...
Correct.
Do you remember your thoughts when you first heard Metamorphose, whatever sequence it was in, whatever it was?
I thought that this was a heavier album in general, as a total album. It's heavier.
Certainly heavier, yeah. And sorry to backtrack here now for a second, but... I suppose I'm still kind of intrigued because we didn't have the likes of Google Translate and things back then. At this point, you're obviously a big fan of the band. You know, you've gone and bought multiple releases by them. Are you at any point trying to translate or decipher what these lyrics are about?
Back then, you had to like get out a dictionary.
Yeah.
A French English dictionary. It wasn't like a Google it, you know. You had to do that to try to find a word and stuff like that. But yeah, but more like the titles than like going into depth about the song or whatever. So you kind of like, it's kind of funny because you get a song about the Amazon and then you kind of like, I don't know, guess what the song is about. You know what I mean? Like, you're just kind of like, oh, I don't say make your own words, but you know what I mean? Like, kind of go,
yeah.
You know, and you know, Gladiator. Okay. I kind of got the idea what this song is about.
Gladiator. Yeah. It's not too difficult. Right. So sorry, I'm away from my tangent now. So let's go back to the album Metamorphose. So the opening track is called D'Air, which is a word I looked up. Just to give a bit of context, I did study French in school and I didn't do too badly in the Leaving Certificate or final exam in secondary school in French. And I was still kind of lost looking at a lot of these words. So I looked up D'Air and what I found was that it has multiple meanings. Besides, anyway, then, although, or somewhere else. So those were the various different definitions I got for D'Air. And I believe it must mean somewhere else because it appears to be talking about aliens. And if you look at the English version of the song on the English version of the album Metamorphosis, the song is just called Alien. So, yeah. Anyway, regardless of what it means, let's have a listen to the opening riff of this song because it's a fantastic opening to their album Metamorphose. So, yeah, let's have a listen.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm going to stop it there, but what a fantastic intro. What a bloody great vocal. Just everything about it.
Yeah, it's a great way to kick off. There's a great way to kick off an album, right? You're kicking it off and you're like, and I remember being like, oh yeah, okay, here we go. This sounds really good. And then you have high hopes for the rest of the album, you know, when you start off with such a strong track.
You do. And then they kick in with the song Majesté, right? Which I assume means majesty. This is the second song on the album, which is fantastic. Let's have a listen to that.
That song isn't as heavy as the first one, but it's catchy.
Certainly is catchy, yeah.
You know, it's catchy, it's melodic.
And it's the French again here that really sells this to me. It's the French language. It just doesn't sound as good if you listen to the Majesté version on the English album.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just a great combination.
So this song, Majesté, if you were to ask me to play something that, you know, represents Sortilège, to play something that epitomizes the band or defines the band, this is what I would play.
That's what you would play? This is the song you would play?
No, not the part I just played.
Okay.
But yeah, this bit coming up now. I'll stop it there. But yeah, for me, that is the clip I would play if you wanted me to show you something that epitomizes the band.
It's not a bad clip to play. It's excellent. It's excellent. And I mean, I think that, I mean, that you listen to that and it just, how can you not compare that to the other bands of the time, you know, and think that they were just right up there.
It's excellent. And to me, you know, it's as good as, or in some cases better than the music we were getting in 1983. And I'm including Iron Maiden, Peace of Mind. I'm including Kill 'Em All by Metallica. I'm including, I don't know, A Holy Diver. I'm including...
It's better than a lot of stuff that we got, like first, second albums that we got from people. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I just think that they're the total package, you know? I mean, the drumming is amazing on this album. We haven't even talked about the drummer yet, but I mean, just... It's sad that somehow they didn't translate over here.
Yeah.
Or that I feel like they didn't translate over here because nobody that was in a position gave them a chance. You know, nobody like Rolling Stone magazine or Cream magazine or rock radio, you know, made the effort, you know. It was all about just, you know.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say it's all about, you know, back then it was all payola, you know what I mean? And it wasn't really about, I mean, there were people out there. There were, my friend Bill Peters from Metal on Metal was probably playing them in 1982 in Cleveland, Ohio, but you know, That's Cleveland, Ohio. How many people heard them? Heard him? You know, it wasn't like a big market. You know, it's a college radio station in middle America. You know, where you really needed somebody in New York or L.A. or Chicago. You know, that had a larger market and a larger audience to champion them.
Sorry, explain payola there for people who might not know what that means.
Pay to play. Like, basically, record companies would pay radio stations to put their band or the album of that band, or the single from that band, on the rotation.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, they're basically paying money so that the songs can be heard. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of the same idea as the pay to play, you know, where people are paying to showcase at a bar or, you know, at a venue or whatever. It's kind of the same concept, you know what I mean? You're basically, and the idea behind it is that, you know, kind of like you're going to get your foot in the door type of thing.
Mm.
Like, I'm going to grease your palm and you're going to play this, you know, whatever, three times a day or whatever the deal is. And then people are going to, you know, request it, because back in the day, the more that something got requested, the more it got put on the, you know, got put into the playlist, got put into the rotation.
Mm.
And so that was kind of like the way to sort of get the band in the door. The problem with that is that if you were a band that was on a bigger label or had a Fat Cat production company behind you or agent behind you, they were able to grease more palms than like a small guy can do, right? And their EP, I believe, came out on like a small label from the Netherlands, and then they got signed to a label in France. I mean, that label had no juice in the U.S.
Sure.
And what's too bad is that they couldn't get a video on MTV, because that was another avenue in the 80s for people who weren't getting any airplay to get airplay, quote unquote, in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. And if they had have done, this song would have been an absolute banger. I'm going to play the song Civilization Perdue.
Love this song.
Yeah, let's have a listen to this. Love it. I'm going to pause that there, but oh God, the enthusiasm, the aggression, the passion.
Yeah, I mean, you can mosh to that song. The kids today could mosh to that song. The kids today, did I say that?
Yeah, I think you did there.
I could say that. Oh my God, I'm such an old woman. You know what I mean? Like, you could, I mean, that is, you know, bordering on the thrash. Maybe it's not as heavy as thrash, but it's definitely heavy metal.
Yeah, I agree. Trashy, certainly, and full of excellent guitar work, like this unbelievable solo. Have a listen. They just had so many strings to their bow.
Yeah, absolutely. Total package. Because it's not enough to have, you know, you can have a guitar hero and you can have, you know, a great singer, but you have to have the whole package. You have to have, everything has to be excellent. And they're at a high level. I mean, this is their first full-length album and they're at this level.
I know, it's kind of hard to comprehend. Anyway, look, moving on, I'm going to play another song from this album. This song is called Delir d'un Fou, which directly translates to Delirium of a Madman. And I'm going to play about the first minute or so of this song because it's nice and atmospheric, has a great build-up.
Assis dans mon lit.
Right, so I'm just going to stop it there. But yeah, Delirium of a Madman, the highlight to me, not just of this album, Metamorphose, but of the entire Sortilege catalogue. This is my favourite song of theirs.
It's sort of, I mean, it's a power ballad, but it's a heavier side of the power ballad. But it's outstanding. And that's the song that you can just like sing along to.
Well, maybe if I know that I'm going to see them live, I'll probably learn these lyrics off and do my best to sing along in French.
Me too. And probably horrify all the French people around us.
Right.
Yeah, I basically know like choruses, kind of.
All right, so another highlight of the album for me is the title track Metamorphose. So let's have a little listen to the intro of that.
Fantastic.
Indeed. I mean, I said, let's have a listen to the intro, but I didn't want to stop it, to be honest.
We get carried away. This isn't a YouTube channel. People can't see that we're rocking out, but we're rocking out. Every time you play a clip, you and I are rocking out.
Well, maybe one day as bonus material, I'll release the videos of these podcasts, although maybe not. But in general, isn't that one of the best fucking songs you've ever heard in your life?
I think that that seems to be, from what I can tell, their most popular song.
Mm.
Like when you listen to the live album, everybody knows the words to that album. It seems like it knows the words to this song. I think it seems to be, this seems to be their hit.
I mean, I think it's well placed to be their most well-known song. It deserves to be their most well-known song on the album. It's so bloody good. Anyway, moving on. Anything else you want to talk about on this?
On this album, there's another song. I don't know how to pronounce it. Cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
That song, they are... Cyclops de la Tongue?
Cyclops de la Tongue?
They're channeling, it's like Stargazer, right? The way it opens and everything. They're totally channeling Deep Purple with that song. There's some Richie Blackmore love on that and Dio love on that track. That's such a great track. You play the opening part of that track.
I certainly will. Let's go. We'll be right back. I will pause it there, but yeah, I can completely understand what you mean. Channeling Rainbow, Stargazer, Ritchie Blackmore, etc. Yep.
Yeah, and even Cozy Powell in the beginning there.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they definitely like some Deep Purple. They definitely can get that vibe.
Who fucking doesn't, though, in fairness?
That's true. That's true. That's true. On this album, too, they have that song, Legend.
Mm-hmm.
I consider that their new wave or British heavy metal song.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It sort of has that vibe to it, that early Iron Maiden, Saxon, Diamond Head thing going on.
Let's play a little bit of Legend. Okay, I'll stop it there.
Can you hear the new wave of British heavy metal in that?
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
That could have come off an underground new wave of British heavy metal compilation album from the 1980s, or maybe a more modern one, which is focusing on underground songs.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll move along. But before we do, I didn't really mention this to you, but I don't know if we're going to get around to discussing their English versions of the albums. I know we've made brief reference to them, but I didn't really take any notes on them, to be honest. I don't know what your thoughts are there.
The English versions are fine, but if you really want to experience this band, you need to experience them in French.
Yeah.
They're a French-speaking band. It's what they do. And you can see, and you know what I think is interesting is, so they disbanded and then they reformed. And I really don't know too much about the other new Sortilege. I only know about the Zulie Sortilege. And they played Keep It True. Was it 2016? I think it was 2016 or 2017. They played Keep It True, which probably a lot of Americans, that was their first time they ever saw them or even knew anything about them.
Mm.
But what I think is interesting now is they put out a new album. There's no English version. I think they're just like, you know what?
Fuck it.
We're in our 60s. Well, I mean, he's got a band behind him that their kids are clearly not in their 60s. But I think he's just kind of like, you know what? I'm not going to pander. I'm just going to do what I do.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he knows that he's never going to be, you know, he's not going to be to the level of Iron Maiden at this point or whatever. And as you know, I'm tracking the guy down, trying to get him on my show. But like, I just feel like it's sort of like they're just like, yeah, we're a French speaking band. We're going to sing in French. And that's just how it is. It's funny because you and I have talked about this, but, and a lot of other people know, I have been chasing this guy all over the internet for so long. And I got a response that he was going to come on the show. And then I haven't heard anything since. But the joke is, if I was in France, I'd probably just go to his house and ring his doorbell. But I'm seriously trying to get, I would love to talk to him about this band that you and I both love. I mean, I understand whatever, you know, you don't know what's going on in somebody's personal life or whatever. It's just so like, but you know what? I'm happy to talk about them with you.
Same here.
Instead.
Yeah. Same here.
Do you have a beer fridge in your man cave?
No, I don't. So I have to go downstairs.
You should rectify that and get a fridge.
I should rectify that. But you know what? It would just mean I would drink more beer. Which
and not
I don't really
and
need.
Not get any exercise.
Exactly. The best exercise I get up in this fucking house is going up and down the stairs.
For beer and go to the bathroom, yeah. Well, I mean, it's true. If you're going to go get a beer, then you can go to the bathroom and get a beer at the, like, they're right there so you can
But no, I don't need
to stop
a
shopping.
Beer fridge in my room. I mean, I do need a beer fridge in my room.
But then you'd have to get a porta potty as well.
Exactly. And where would we be then?
Elaine would love that.
She probably would. All right, so let's move along here with our discography. So we're going to move on to the next and second Sortilège full album. It's called L'Armée des Héros, or
yes,
Heroes Tears in English. And the first song on this is called Le Hargne de Tordu. And if you look that up on Google Translate, it directly translates into Anger of the Twisted. All right. But then if you go and actually look up the English version of the album, Metamorphosis, which was released same year, I think, when they got around to releasing the English version, it's called The Elephant Man. So who knows what the hell they're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, this is such a good song too, but it's weird. I thought the same thing. It's kind of a weird translation.
Yeah. It seems bizarre, but anyway.
Yeah. I don't know either, but I know it's a really good song.
Let's play a little bit of it anyway, while we're here. All right. My God, what a blistering opening of a song.
So this is the first song that I ever heard from them.
No way.
And I'm thinking they certainly sound like of the day. They sound like everything that I was listening to in 85, 86.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they fit right in.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, such a good song.
The Anger of the Twisted, according to Google Translate.
Or the Elephant Man, depending on.
Or the Elephant Man, if you wish. Anyway, look, listen, come here to me. I don't know actually which part of the song is supposed to be the chorus of the song, but I reckon it might be this part, so I'm just going to go for it and play it. So hold on a sec.
It's something like don't look away or look at me or don't walk away or something to that effect, I think, as I recall.
Well, if that was the chorus, and indeed if that's what that means, then fair play. Anyway, we're going to move on, I think. So give me one sec here.
All right, we're going to move on.
We're going to move on to the second track on L'Armée des Héros.
Chase the Dragon?
Well.
Chasse le Dragon?
Chasse le Dragon, I think. Oh, chasse le dragon, I believe a Frenchman would say.
Or an Irishman impersonating a Frenchman.
Just going back to my oral French there from secondary school. I may have mentioned that I did French in secondary school before.
I heard. I did. You know, I did French. I did French fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade.
Oh, yeah.
But I hated it. Yeah, I did. But you know what? It was a school, it was nuns.
Yeah. Oh, well.
And they were from Montreal and they were miserable. They were miserable bitches. And like, I hated every minute of it. So kind of in one ear and out the other. It's funny because some stuff is stuck. Because when I went up to Montreal, it was like, oh, yeah, I could pick up stuff. So it's like embedded in my brain. But I kind of like rejected it because I hated that school so much.
Well, no one likes fucking nuns anyway.
Oh, they're no fun.
All right, anyway, let's just have a listen to this song. How about that?
How about that?
How about it? All right.
Oh,
Wow.
That song reminds me of Prodigal Son.
Oh, Prodigal Son. All right, yeah.
And that's not an insult.
Iron Maiden, Prodigal Son, for listeners who don't know.
Yes. Nobody listening to this show who doesn't know Prodigal Son.
Well, there might be. Who knows? Listen, I have all sorts of listeners here in Feck and Metal, as I'm sure you do.
You do. Chat, you do. You do. They come out of the woodwork.
The man on the street, people, random people who pick a bizarre episode, people who just start listening for the very first time on Neil K episode 2. So you never know who's listening.
That's
or
true.
What they know about anything, really.
Yes, I'm referring to Iron Maiden, Prodigal Son. That song reminds me of that.
Good. Well, glad we clarified that, and not to confuse with all the other Prodigal Sons out there. Anyway, look, that was a very nice intro, but let's listen, I think, to the chorus of the song. If you hold on here.
Hold on to your hat.
Hold on, soldier. All right, let's go. Chess le dragon. As Sortilege said, fuck, goddammit, if that's not great, then I don't know what it is.
That's fantastic. Fantastic.
Isn't it, though?
It is. The next song reminds you of Halloween.
The next song reminds me of Halloween. All right.
Yeah. Le dernier des travaux.
Yeah, I didn't take any notes on this one, but I will play it just for you.
You don't have to play it. You don't have to play it. I'm just telling everybody that you can go play it.
No.
And it'll have it has a Halloween feel. Or you play it then, damn it.
I fucking will play it, right? Is there any particular part of the song or just straight from the start?
From the start, really. But I mean, throughout the song, but...
Yeah, I can definitely hear that. I'd say it sounds more like the Andy Deris version,
yes,
of Halloween, yeah, rather than the Hiskey version.
Which is funny about that, because when this album comes out, it's actually the Michael Kiske era, not the Andy Deris era, but it does have that Halloween-y feel to it. So, I mean, when I heard this album, I didn't go, oh, that reminds me of Halloween, right? But it just now in post, it does.
In post
Andy Deris Halloween, it reminds me of Halloween.
All right. Okay. So look, it's getting a bit late in my neck of the woods here. I've had more than a few beverages. I might need to wrap this up soon. Although I think we've covered pretty much everything important, maybe.
But we need. But wait a minute. We need to talk about my favorite song on the album.
All right. Go on.
Marchons de Homme. Homme. Marchons de Homme. That's my favorite song on this album.
All right. Marchons de Homme. Dom. Let's give it a go. Stop it there.
We're listening to the whole album, folks.
Well, look, you know, I'd love to, but yeah, gonna have to wrap this one up soon ish
okay, well, we should probably wrap it up by telling people that to go check them out. They're on Spotify. They have a new album out. They are doing gigs in Europe, so if you're listening to this in Europe, go see them in France, because they're playing all over France. They have a new live album out, which is fantastic.
Yeah, they certainly do have a few dates coming up in France there. Just looking here on their website, on the 13th of April, they're playing the Crick Fest 3. On the 18th of May, they're playing Hard Rock Legend. 1st of June, they're playing the Normandy Metal Fest. And the 22nd of June, they're playing Heavy Weekend. And they did have a live album out in 2023 called Coram Populo. And actually, I'm just seeing now they have an EP coming out as well in April, which features, it's vinyl only, and it features six tracks that weren't on that album. So there you go, another live release coming from them this month. You can have a look at their Facebook page there for that. But yeah, anyway, I think this is now probably the time to wrap this up. So obviously we didn't really touch on the modern version of Sortilege, and they do have a, you know, an album out, a live album, a couple of releases, upcoming releases, and we didn't touch really on the English versions of the albums, but as we discussed, they're not really that good. But if you're interested in Sortilege after having listened to this and the clips that we featured and the discussion we had, go and check them out on Spotify, or go look at their Bandcamp or whatever, look at their Facebook. But I think I'm going to have to leave it here. So look, I'm going to end this one with a really annoying trait that Irish people use at the end of a phone call and say, goodbye, 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 bye, bye, bye.
All right, my friend. Nighty-night. It's late for you. Good night.
And thanks again for doing this, Melissa. This is going to be a joint release on both of our podcasts. You know, we'll let everybody know when that's out. But yeah, thanks a million. And I'll talk to you again.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Melissa.
Bye.
All right, so that was my chat with Melissa from a few weeks back about the band Sortilege, where we reviewed their first few releases in their discography, and I hope you found something to enjoy there if you've never heard of them before. If you have heard of them, hope you enjoyed it anyway. If not, though, go and investigate them. Have a look, have a listen, and maybe if you're living in France, you can go to some of those gigs. Who knows? But that's going to do it for this episode. So I want to thank you for listening as always. And if you would like to contact me, you can do that at feckinmetalcast on Twitter. Or if you want to email me, you can email me at feckinmetal@gmail.com. As I mentioned, the other podcast that I'm involved in, Feckology, is up now as well on Twitter at Feckology. Or if you look up Feckology on any podcast platforms, you'll find it there. Regarding upcoming episodes of Feckin' Metal, a few weeks ago, I spoke to
the guitarist from Amethyst, Eve Bradler, and we had a great chat. That'll be my next episode coming out. And after that, recently I also spoke to Stephen Waddle, an alumnus of Feckin' Metal. He's been on twice before, and this time, though, we weren't really talking about his band Oath SC, although we do mention them a bit, but what we were doing was reviewing the recent albums released by Blaze Bailey and Bruce Dickinson, so that's coming your way soon as well. And that's going to do it for this episode, so thanks for listening. I've been your host, Fergal Trainer, and I will see you next time.